I found this in Ganarum.
Ganamir Ni.
What is it?
Well, it's, it's
Super Homeless.
In my gravity boots, I'm stuck walking the hole with a pounding in my skull. Ain't nobody knows which way the solar wind blows. Better than a man being blown.
Welcome to Synthaholics, guys. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me today is...
Aaron O'Brien.
Who's that?
Some guy from the past. Some has-been.
The ghost of Star Trek past?
Yeah, I know. A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far... Oh, wait, that's the wrong galaxy. Yeah,
far,
I'm
far
back.
In the future.
I'm back, and let the wackiness ensue.
Yes, indeed.
You guys need more wackiness in your life.
More wackiness. So, I read it the other day. There was an article on Facebook, or I don't know, I mean, who the person was. I don't remember what website it was from, but someone was saying they want to see Spock show up in Star Trek Discovery.
Hmm.
And I'm like, that would be interesting. Like, it was something I never considered because I just figured they wouldn't show, you know, since it wasn't going to be with the Enterprise, I figured they wouldn't show anyone.
I think I remember seeing a Memory Alpha somewhere, and I could be completely wrong about this, but Spock signed up for Starfleet in 2250. So if he was, it's a possibility he could show up in Star Trek Discovery. So,
well, I mean, like, he was, I think he was with Pike on the Enterprise 13 years before Kirk. So, I mean, Spock has been in Starfleet for a couple of years by the time Axnar... but not Axnar. Sorry, spoiler for the rest of the episode.
Thanks, Dave.
No! But it was by the time Discovery rolls around.
Yeah, yeah. It's a possibility. He'd probably be, you know, an ensign Spock. Maybe just be like, hey, guys.
But, like, it would be
just
crazy.
Just the Academy.
I think the guy in the article was making the point that Zachary Quinto should come over and play Spock on the TV show. Like, that would be a really cool handoff. And Star Trek has always had handoffs.
It would be cool if that happened. I don't know if that if Zachary would do that. He seems to be kind of, you know, in a mode that he plays only certain parts for certain amounts of money. And I could be wrong.
I mean, like, I really hope he does, because Star Trek has always had a handoff. Because you've got... Next Generation, you've got Bones appearing in the first episode, and then you've got Picard appearing in the first episode of Deep Space Nine,
right.
And then you've got Quark appearing in the first episode of Voyager.
Right.
So, like...
Who showed up in Enterprise?
I don't think anyone...
Nobody.
Star Trek has almost always had handoffs.
Nobody in Voyager. I mean, nobody in Enterprise.
Well, it was too far back.
Yeah. No, I'm just being a smartass.
Yeah, yeah, but it's just... They could totally... I mean, like... Have Zachary Quinto, and I know he's supposed to. I know it's supposed to be Primetime Universe.
Mm-hmm.
Primetime Universe. It's 7 o'clock Eastern,
7 to 9.
But and everyone's like, "Oh no!" Everyone's gonna be like, "No." Well, he's the Kelvin Universe, and I'm like, "Well, they're supposed to be the exact same people. They only look different is because they had to recast."
Technically, the Kelvin timeline had not changed yet. I mean, other than Nero's ship showing up and destroying the Kelvin. The time hadn't been drastically altered yet, other than, you know, Kirk's father being killed and the Kelvin being destroyed.
Yeah, but I mean, it's still prime. It's still the Discovery's supposed to be in the prime timeline. So, like the only reason Zachary Quinto's playing Spock is because he's the most recent person cast as Spock. But technically, they're supposed to be identical looking to the previous characters.
Gotcha. Right, right.
So, I mean, like, there's no reason why it couldn't, other than negotiations with him and big money. But I think that would be a fantastic way to hand it off.
I would think contracts have something to do, because this is CBS, and he has probably a contract with Paramount.
Yeah.
But who knows?
But it's just in a time period where we're technically doing prime. I mean, like, you know, like original characters and stuff like that. And it's in that same time period. I'm like, you could sort of do that, like, walk on cameo thing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I don't know.
It would be cool. I'd like to see that too.
I mean, they could use anybody.
They could use like someone who looks like Spock, but a very young version of Spock. You know, like, just out of high school. Still got pimples. Yeah, so that's cool. We're, you know, I I've been psyched for Discovery. There's a lot of cool things going to be happening, and I think we'll be getting more and more news releases. We keep on getting all these rumors, but who knows what the hell.
Well, Star Trek Mission New York is happening as we record, as is Dragon Con, where Faith is, as is, I don't remember what con Guy is at currently, but he is at a con right now.
We don't go
PAX. PAX is also, I think PAX West is currently happening. Salt Lake Con is happening because they debuted, or they're debuting the new episode of Star Trek Continues there, like, last night, and I think they're debuting it at Fan Expo tonight.
Cool.
And I'm supposed to be going to Fan Expo tomorrow so I can say hey to Vic.
That'll be nice.
Got my fingers crossed that'll work out.
You got Vic, my long-lost friend. the episode we're talking about today... we are talking about the original series... Whom Gods Destroy, Season 3, Episode 14, airing in 1969.
Good old 69.
Yeah. It's a long time ago. And we have a tie-in to something into the present day is the Battle of Axanar, which this is
where Alec Peters is battling in court.
Yeah, but this is where it comes. This is where this the seed of this or the germ of this idea comes from. So it's a very interesting episode. I find there's a lot of compelling things about it, but there's also a lot of like
what
big question marks hanging in the air. A lot of big question marks.
Like, why wasn't the whole episode a dance number by Marta?
Well, that's a good point. We have an Orion woman who has been put into the
Elba 2.
Elba 2, the insane asylum for the criminally insane.
Which is named after the Elba that Napoleon was exiled to.
Exiled to, nice, yeah. She is... like you said, Yvonne Craig, and who's Batgirl? She's beautiful. She's gorgeous.
Absolutely.
So she's just riveting to watch on screen. She has a lot of great screen time, and she has a lot of great interactions between
Kirk and Garth.
Kirk and Garth it's great. It's good stuff.
She's really funny too. She's just so she starts quoting William Shakespeare.
She is, I think, the quintessential psycho girlfriend.
Yes. Even down to, like, I'm totally going to bone you, and then I'm going to pull out a knife.
And kill you.
She both plays the part of Freddy and of the crazy girlfriend.
Yeah, yeah. So
both played by Yvonne Craig.
A lot of interesting people on this in episode. The guy who plays Governor Corey is Key Luke, and he was actually he did a lot of parts. Actually, very famous. He was in he played Charlie Chan's son, his first son, called his number one son.
Number one.
Yeah, he was. And, he also played the original Kato in the Green Hornet. And in the 1960s, just before the Star Trek episode, he played Brack from Space Ghost. Not Space Coast to Coast. Ghost. Just the original Space Ghost.
Coast to Coast is an invention of, what, the 90s?
Yeah, yeah.
Early 2000s?
Which Brack is hilarious in, but in the he was more just a typical villain.
Brack!
Yeah. Typical villain. So, yeah, a lot of interesting. Actually, there's a lot of interesting background stuff with these the actors and people who created this episode.
Like, but, speaking of background characters, like in the scene where Marta does the dance and they're having the feast or whatever, mm-hmm. all those background people like make me think of like they. I feel like they were wearing Batman costumes from the Batman Adam West show.
They might have
standing
been.
In the background. I'm like,
they might have been.
I just like, did they just invite them over and say, hey, we need people to stand on this set, stand right there.
This is definitely before Yvonne Craig played Batgirl, so she hadn't quite.
Yeah, but Batgirl didn't show up till like season two of the other
right.
Batman show. Yeah. And she only showed up like three or four times, like the entire series.
No, she was in a lot. She was in a lot. Because I used to watch it religiously as a kid.
So did I. I just don't remember. I was always excited. I just always remember being excited whenever they had the Batgirl come across on their motorcycle in the opening credits. I'm like, yes, it's Batgirl.
I bet you were.
Yvonne Craig, my boyhood crush. I liked Batgirl. She can play with my bat anytime.
Whoa, people. All right. So just to give a brief rundown, So Kirk and Spock beam down to Alba 2, which is this is an asylum for the incurable, criminally insane.
I thought we've cured everything in the 23rd century.
Apparently, and Spock made the reference that 15 people out of, you know, billions and billions of residents of the Federation. We can get into that more. But so the interesting thing about the planet, Alba 2 has a poison gas atmosphere. You cannot walk. Take a stroll out in the open air, and it has a.
I wonder if the Rigelians can, because at the early when they're young, they breathe a different atmosphere. Maybe they led their children to flock on that planet.
An insane asylum planet? I don't think so.
Maybe it was before. You know, you only saw the wheezing children in the Enterprise pilot episode. So maybe they let their children like wander around until they're old enough to be weaned off the poison gas.
Well, okay. I guess that's a speculation. So this penal colony is like I said, the atmosphere is poisonous, and it has a very tough shield over the actual asylum itself, so no one can beam in, beam out.
That's not a moon. Oh, wait.
And there's a dome over it as well of the actual asylum. So this is like shields within shields, so nobody's getting in, no one's getting out, and when they beam down... they are met by Governor Donald Corey, and like I said, he's played by Key Luke, and he welcomes them. Oh, I haven't seen anybody in a long time. I want to have you to have dinner with me, and you know, it seems very cordial.
It's like, yay, let's go.
Actually, it felt like Kirk met him before.
Yeah, like Kirk. Yeah, he seemed like very familiar.
I called him by his first name. He goes, you know, how are you doing, Donald? You know. So, anyways, he mentions that he has a new inmate, or a patient, should I say, and the patient is Garth Vizar. And he is a famous Starfleet captain who...
Required learning in Starfleet.
Yeah, the Battle of Axanar, of course, and he discovered more planets than any other captain... You know, charted more planets than any other captain. So he's supposed to be...
He must have had a very fast ship.
He was supposed to be the as Kirk says later in the episode, the prototype of the perfect captain. So, yeah. I mean, so here in Kirk mentions that this was his hero, like one of his heroes, and he learned a lot from. And so there's a little bit of hero worship there. So the governor takes Kirk and Spock into... the facility, lots of different shields and stuff like that, you know, clicking lights on and off for where the shields are.
I kind of like that, because like in Next Generation you had like the it was basically just lights,
right? It's the same idea.
But then for whatever reason in Star Trek V, which I know we talked about recently, but this is one of the things they didn't bring up, they use fluorescent light tubes.
Right.
Instead of just like a border. I'm like, why? I mean, like...
Couldn't you just put like a piece of plastic in front of make it look a little more high tech?
Right. I'm like, oh, so you went with the, you know, the border, and then you went to light tubes, and you went back to the border.
Yeah. And it's the whole thing's a little odd. But I mean, so he walks them through, and this is where we first see Yvonne Craig as Marta. And she says, that's not Governor Corey. This is somebody else. And
I can't tell you who. Because he's here.
And Kirk and Spock are like, okay, so this chick's crazy, right? And they kind of dismiss her. And then they bring him to Garth's holding cell. And
who's in there? Not Garth.
Not Garth, but Governor Corey.
Corey.
And he looks like he's pinned to the wall somehow. He's like kind of dangling.
I feel like he's like sitting on a bicycle seat.
I'm not quite sure what's going on there, but...
Looks very uncomfortable.
Looks very uncomfortable. Looks like he hadn't gone to the bathroom in a long time.
Or he had gone to the bathroom.
He
hasn't been able to do anything about it.
He's just soiled himself for quite a few hours.
Kirk doesn't wrinkle his nose, though. Maybe he likes the smell.
And so then we get the intro. We find out that it was actually Garth and... of Izar that has kind of gotten out of cell, and now he's taken over and he surrounds them, Kirk and Spock. And
with other inmates, you got a Tellarite and an Andorian.
Andorian, which is cool to see.
And Yvonne Craig takes off her clothes as soon as she gets out for whatever reason.
Which is fantastic.
Which is great, except she's wearing something underneath what she was wearing.
Which is disappointing. But so, and then it goes to the intro titles, and next we see Spock being dragged away. Off into the, you know, like,
yes, shoot Spock first.
I would think that'd be the best course of logic, you know, get him out of the way. And he puts Kirk into the cell, and then he tries to get the governor
released,
pinned from
off the bicycle seat of doom.
Yeah, and he kind of talks Garth into it, and Garth lets him go. So we're showing that obviously Garth can be a little bit manipulated by Kirk.
Yeah,
because he kind of brings up, he's like, you know, what are you afraid that he has to say?
You think he can hurt you? Like, you know?
Yeah, and Garth's like, I fear no man, and lets him go. So.
Too bad he didn't say, I fear no human.
Human.
Be like a Ferengi.
Well, and then the other part of it is that Captain Kirk tries to give him, you know, be respectful, doesn't know who he's up against, and then he says, Captain Garth. He goes, Lord Garth!
Lord
Garth! Master of the universe!
I you know, after all this Axanar stuff has gone on, like, I cannot watch this episode without thinking of Alec Peters and all the crazy things that Garth is doing.
Yeah.
Because Alec Peters, I think, was originally supposed to play Garth. And he did in the prelude to Axanar. So just every single time, like, he does,
right.
That Garth does something crazy. And, like, you know, after all this stuff happening with the Axanar lawsuit, I just immediately think of Alec Peters.
Yeah, no, I mean, well, I mean,
not in a good way.
Obviously, your mind goes to the Battle of Axanar just watching this. It's part and parcel.
It's part of Star Trek lore now, even though like it's a fan film.
It's not as official canon.
It's not official canon. The battle's canon, but everything that happened in the fictionalized version of it isn't. Because there's even discrepancies between Memory Beta and what they're doing with Axanar. So I mean, no, Beta's not canon, but I mean Axanar's not canon either. So
right, but So Corey explains that Garth can learn how to morph his cellular structure by the Antos natives, who apparently Garth tried to massacre, and his crew mutinied on him when he tried to massacre them. Now, that's not really explained why that happened. It's referenced more than once during this episode, but we don't know really the background. All we know that Garth had some sort of disease that disfigured him, and the people of Antos gave him the power, or taught him the power to morph his cellular structure. So he transforms from Governor Corey back to his former self of Garth of Izard. We don't see his mutated self or whatever happened to him, his disfigured self. He puts Kirk in the cell with Governor Corey, and he transforms himself into Kirk.
And starts laughing and walks away with Yvonne Craig.
Which I think is probably the most quintessential William Shatner moment in maybe all of Star Trek. Just him walking off with a green girl, just laughing. So,
and it wasn't even really Kirk.
It wasn't really Kirk.
Which is the worst part.
Well, so he goes to the control room, and Garth calls up the Enterprise to try to get beamed up because he's going to take over the Enterprise and obviously get off the planet of Alba 2.
You said get off.
Get off.
With Marta.
He's going to escape, should I say. And where Scotty is in charge of the Enterprise at the point, and he gives him the code sign Queen to Queen's Level 3. But Garth doesn't know the answer to that.
Like, I don't have time for chess problems. Beam me up.
Yeah. And he says that's not how you instructed Queen's to Queen's Level 3. And then he's like, just testing you.
Just testing her.
And here we have, after he cuts the communication, Shatner has a meltdown, and it's got to be probably the worst acting I've seen in quite a while. I know people mock Shatner for as a bad actor. I don't think Shatner is as bad as actors people give him to be, but this is pretty corny acting.
But he's not trying to act like Kirk. He's trying to act like Garth, which is trying to act like Alec Peters.
I know, but I just don't. I don't buy it. I don't think Kirk has done enough method acting to get the tantrum down, because it just didn't seem right. I didn't feel violent enough. I think it like on the cusp of
it
violence.
It felt childish.
It did feel extremely childish. It felt worse than childish because he was
on the ground screaming and kicking and banging.
Look,
his hands
I have children. I've seen this happen. I've seen children have their tantrums, and I get where he was going to it, but it wasn't quite violent enough. So that's all I'm going to say. You know, everyone who's heard me in the past, I'm a huge Shatner fan. I think that was kind of poor acting. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, you know, on the flip side, I think the best acting Shatner ever did was Spock's death scene, where he's the most human.
I think Shatner's done a great. Oh my God, there's a lot of scenes I could give you as a great acting. I mean,
well, sure, but I'm just saying, like, this is the low point in Shatner's.
I don't know if it's a low point, but it's pretty low.
This is the low point of Shatner's acting.
I forgot the movie where Shatner is getting attacked by spiders in the basement, and he's trying to crawl upstairs. It's one of his, like, in between Star Trek and the motion picture. It's a terrible scene. It's terrible. Anyways, I'm not going
to
get.
But then I would say, I mean, to me, his best scene is probably when he's giving Spock's eulogy.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, Shatner's done a lot of great scenes, and that's unfortunately that people kind of peg him as a bad actor, and I think that's just an oversight,
especially in the original series.
Yeah, and it's become like he's so Shatner's.
It's a parody.
Yeah, Shatner's become so iconic. It's hard for people to see past that. It's like you don't really understand how he carried that whole series, him and Nimoy, and DeForest Kelly, of course. But those three had to be so strong of actors. And the scripts and obviously story and ideas were great. But if you didn't have good actors behind it, it would have never flied. It would look terrible.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I remember being a child and being like, you know, making fun of William Shatner's acting. And my dad was like, you know, they hired him because he was a really good actor. First time, I'm like, really?
I just think that people find his speech, his cadence of speech, and his mannerisms humorous. But I think it's because he is iconic and he's got a charisma that is undeniable.
Sure. Yeah. He's.
Anyways, enough of Shatner worship. I mean, but that's definitely...
All hail to Shatner.
I love Shatner. He has his flaws, of course, but don't we all? So Garth realizes, of course, that he can't take the Enterprise without Kirk's help.
He wants to get revenge on all the people that mutinied on him.
Yes. I think Garth could be... potentially another con if it wasn't for, you know, Kirk resolving this at the end of this episode.
Like, I would love to see this, like, in the Kelvin timeline.
Yeah.
Like, with a good budget, and he gets a ship.
Yeah.
And then, like, see Kirk be a tactician, because this is one of the things I said, I think, on our second In the Dark Beyond discussion, was I want to see the tactician Kirk. And... who best to bring out the tactician Kirk than supposedly the most legendary technician, Garth?
Right, right.
And I would love this. That would be a great movie, seeing like...
There's a lot of fodder for great story here. Obviously, Battle of Axanar being an offshoot of that. So Garth comes back, invites, and says, I forgot I invited you to dinner. And he brings Spock out and is trying to be,
look,
friendly.
Spock's here. He's not dead. See, I didn't stun him.
I just stunned. That's all. So Kirk tries to get Corey to come, the Governor Corey, but he says, no, he's not invited, blah, blah, blah. And
Kirk's like, okay, we'll decline then.
But, of course, Corey says, just don't be an idiot. Just go. Just leave me here. I've shit my pants already.
I don't want Yvonne Craig to see me with poop in my pants.
I got my brownie brown pants on. So they go to dinner, and the first scene we have is the Andorian giving the Tellarite
a wheelbarrow.
And they're all like laughing and having a good time. And this is
I just can't imagine what went through the actors' minds when they're like, okay, we're wearing all this alien makeup, and we're gonna do like a child's wheelbarrow like trick.
It's a weird thing about especially 1960s television and even, you know, movies, is that when they try to show the insane, they make it almost childlike and a little bit silly. And I'm like, I can see that's a little bit of the insane lifestyle, but
okay,
it's,
let's watch American Horror Story Asylum.
Yeah, or just watch, what was it, 12 Monkeys, where Brad Pitt's in the
Hannibal.
you know, all that kind of stuff. It's just like, it's one of those things like, yeah, I know there's like goofiness inside the asylum, but there's a lot of people doing like really terrible things and very sad people. You know, I'm just, it's, yeah. It's not a fun.
It's not a funny farm, which is what.
Yeah, they make it into something like, woohoo, we're just all goofy people all hanging out.
Which is what McCoy calls it in Star Trek III, the Federation Funny Farm.
Federation Funny Farm. Well,
maybe he's alluding to Elba too.
Yeah. Well, for the criminally insane. Well, so
do you need more than one place? Considering like there's so few.
Well, this is for the criminally insane. This is not having to do with just the insane. Yeah. So we don't know. So
it's a planet.
It's a planet.
It's not the shed out back in my backyard. No. This is a planet.
This is a planet with crazy people who would murder you. then they have, you know, exchange between Marta and Garth. Marta says that she's very creative. She can paint. She can write
Shakespeare all by herself.
She quotes Shakespeare and
she wrote it. Yesterday.
She said she wrote yesterday, which I guess you could quintessentially just say, yes, I did write, and I plagiarize Shakespeare. This is the part of it also is Garth's reaction.
It's all way over the top, and he's so angry, and he shouts a lot. I just this is also where I imagine Alec Peters, like...
it is a little silliness. I don't know... part of it is, like, I like when Garth is more even-keeled, and, you know, he can be criminally insane without having these bursts of anger and this, you know, go off the deep end.
I don't think they were allowed to be subtle in the 60s.
I guess not. It could have been just, you know.
Because, I mean, you see subtle insane or subtle, like, you know, stuff like in Deep Space Nine and some other things.
Right.
I mean, where, like, Ezri's kind of going nuts and she's got, like, she's pulling out one of her press symbionts is whispering in her ear. And so, like, you know, that was, like, not over the top. And she was almost going to kill somebody.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like they don't seem to understand the 60s. I just – because I've seen a lot of TV shows from the 60s and movies where they try to show the insane and paint them almost as, like, a bunch of children. And it's like, it's not really what it's like.
I mean, I'm sure some of them might be like that.
Yeah, I'm sure, like, there are parts of them, but there's lots of other things. People defecating in the corner. There's people, you know, trying to sexually assault other people. There's just depression, sadness. People so drugged they're drooling all over themselves. I mean, that's an insane...
And as silly as this was, and as lighthearted a crazy person place... This episode wasn't aired on the UK till like 1992. Like,
because
of the depiction of the insane.
Oh, they thought it was too dark.
I think there's a couple episodes that they mentioned that they just didn't ever air in the original time in the UK on the BBC because of, you know, they said, you know, insanity is a sad thing and we don't want to see this, you know, depicted on screen or whatever.
I know, so. It's sad.
But they're happy. They're doing wheelbarrow tricks and
they are.
Very, very sexy dances.
Well, so anyway, so then we get this great dance sequence with Marta. Garth has her do a dance. It's beautiful. It's erotic. I love
the light. I mean, she looks stunning green, but she looks even more stunning green under that green light.
She definitely plays someone who's flaky, a little off in the head, but she does this great dance, trying to sort of seduce Kirk at the same time, totally ignoring Spock.
Because Spock calls her dancing reminiscent of Vulcan children.
Yeah, yeah.
Except they're not as coordinated. I'm like, well, then how is it reminiscent at all?
Right. And, you know, we get this, I don't know, it's very, I think this is actually Marta's dance as an Orion is probably one of the quintessential, you know, exotic parts of Star Trek, the original series.
Like, probably.
One of the
and
things
the cage.
That, yeah, exactly. But it's one of those things that just like you, when you see it, you're like, oh, this is the original Star Trek. This is where they all, you know, I don't know. It's a very interesting.
The Enterprise Orion dance was pretty awesome. And there was three of them.
I'm not diminishing that either. I'm just saying is that
this is quintessentially 60s though, like the original start. Yeah,
right.
I get what you're saying. This is very
it's
dated, but in a good way.
It's very interesting, and so we do have an exchange with. Basically, Garrus saying, I'm going to take over. I'm going to build a fleet. I'm going to... Kirk, you'll be my
what
second
fleet?
Command.
Out there.
Out there.
It's like, just also, I'm just thinking
it's
like...
It's obviously Garrus is delusional. Completely delusional. You know? And it's funny. He considers the Federation's higher-ups as weaklings and
people. Which is like really weird. Because it's almost the way Krull thinks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Like, I wonder if Krull was somehow, like, somewhat sort of based on Garth's sort of...
I think...
Not really, but I mean, like, just a couple of exchanges that he made in this made me think of Krull in Star Trek Beyond.
Yeah, and I think it's a quintessential thing. I think we see it even today. We see a lot of people who backlash against government bureaucracy and, you know, government oversight, and they're like, you know, that kind of thing. I think people... have a visceral response to it. And yes, you know, I'm not going to deny that the fact that, you know, government interference in a lot of things can be very aggravating, but also has a place at some points too. So you know, I'm not going to get into that debate, but it is one of those things I think...
people, I'm not going to continue it.
but a lot of people really get very, very upset about it. And he felt that obviously Garth was a great captain, a great explorer.
Hashtag anarchy.
And he felt that the bureaucrats of the Federation were below him.
Yes.
You know, and we don't know what happened in between all that, so maybe there are other reasons for that. Who the hell knows?
Or he's just crazy at this point and doesn't even know what he's saying.
I think that's a little bit of it, too. So the next part I just want to bring out is that he has a Kirk calls Spock his brother.
Yes.
And I thought that was a great little exchange. You know, Spock kind of goes, well, he's obviously being
emotional
about this.
But I don't disagree.
But I don't disagree. I kind of still feel he's my brother, too. So I thought that was kind of cool. They, you know, kind of call themselves brothers, which I think they call themselves brothers in
Star Trek 5.
Star Trek 5. Yeah. So that's.
I lost a brother once. I got him back.
The next part is when. Spock pisses off Garth. He says something to him that he doesn't agree with. I can't quite remember exactly what it was, but basically he just logically challenges Garth in every point, and Garth finally got tired of answering.
Get that animal away!
Yeah.
He also calls Marta a cow earlier in the scene, which is
awful.
Yeah,
you stupid cow. Yeah.
which is awful. I'm like...
Well, when you're the criminally insane, I guess anything goes.
I guess, but I mean, it's like...
Which we find out more as time goes on. That is the least of Marta's problems when she gets called a stupid cow.
Spock lot.
So the next part, he brings out... a chair. The chair is the chair that we saw in Dagger of the Mind way back in season one. And he's modified this chair to just torture people. Apparently it doesn't do any cellular damage. So there's no tissue damage. It just makes you crazy.
It's like a sonic brain wave.
That's just
pain maker.
And he throws, of course, Governor.
It probably just sounds like chalk, you know, fingernails against a chalkboard, but beam directly into your brain.
Your head, exactly. He throws Governor Corey in the chair. At this point, I'm feeling Governor Corey is quite the human punching bag. You know, I mean, first he shit his pants and then throw him into this thing. Come on.
Or he gets shat his pants again.
Yeah, he's like, oh no! So.
Down one pet leg and down the other. My pants will come off real nice now.
My boots are filled with turds.
These boots were made for turding.
They were. Brown boots. Oh, by the way, did you notice Garth had two different color boots on?
No, I didn't.
He had a gold and silver boots.
I love his giant...
cloak?
Like, fur coat.
Yeah, yeah.
That he's using the cover of the outfit that the governor... Not the governor, but the guy from Galileo 7 wore. Same outfit.
Oh, yeah, the...
itty bitty cape. So he's using a giant cloak to hide that silly itty bitty cape.
Whoever he was, that annoying guy. So he puts the governor into the chair, tortures the poor governor, basically trying to get Kirk to find out the answer of, you know, the Queen's
level three.
Yeah, the code to get onto the Enterprise. Kirk doesn't break, of course. And he's like, torture him all you want. Doesn't affect me. Of course, okay. Then they throw Kirk in the chair next, and we get some nice acting of torture from Kirk. Of course, Kirk does not break still. And then Marta decides, say, I could get him to talk. And, you know, Garth, who seems jealous at some points with what Marta's affection towards Kirk, then decides.
But earlier he's like, you can have her.
Yeah, he's like, you can have her. And then
he's just crazy.
He's all over the map.
He doesn't know if he wants her to sleep with him or not.
Yeah, he's all over the map. But he decides, yeah, I want the Enterprise more than I want Marta, which we find out later.
Yeah.
As well. So, Kirk's brought to Marta's little pad there, which is pretty posh for an insane asylum. It's a nice bed, and it looks pretty inviting.
And Kirk's like, okay.
Yeah, Kirk is getting made out. is having a makeout session with this Ryan Green chick, so that's pretty awesome. Quintessential Kirk. But then Marta, being crazy, decides to pull a knife on him.
She wants to penetrate him.
She wants to do something.
She gets Spock blocked.
Yeah, Spock shows up. Apparently, she said that she got Spock to come out of his cell by one of the guards who found her desirable. And just when she's trying to kill Kirk, and she pulls a knife, tries to stab Kirk. Kirk disarms her, throws a knife on the floor. She tries to grab the knife, and there's Spock there, and he steps on the knife and gives her the Vulcan nerve pinch. This Spock has a phaser, and they go to the control room to try to get back onto the ship. And there we find out they want to have the call sign, and Kirk's like, wait a second, do I trust this guy? And then they're both looking at each other like, do I trust this guy? Because they're thinking it both could be Garth. Of course, Spock is Garth, and he transforms back into Garth's form. And Kirk never gave the sign or the code. And he basically has a fight with Garth in the control room.
And then Garth turns into Kirk.
Well, that's a little bit later. But first he has to have his coronation, remember?
Oh, yeah.
Which is pretty ridiculous.
He crowns himself king, just like Napoleon crowned himself.
So Kirk and... act of desperation, control room tries to lower the shields so the security detail can get
beam down.
And
even though he doesn't know, he just assumes that the guy's got.
If you just turn it off, it'd be all right. But he gets stunned by Garth's phaser, and next he finds himself in Garth's mess hall for a coronation, another act of lunacy on the Elba II. And what we have is. Another example of just silliness of, like I say, is 1960s, product 1960s idea of what insane people do. It's like, the throne must be higher. I realize it's just a chair, and you put it on top of a table and all this. You know, it's silliness. Yeah. It's all it is. And they have a coronation.
Very bizarre.
And he gives Marta a necklace and says that she is his consort. And then they drag Kirk off into the control room again. And next we have Garth shows up and he says, you know, I built this explosive.
The most powerful explosive ever devised.
It could blow up this whole planet. So, I mean, in part of you are like, okay, is he just crazy? You know, it's like, is this some crazy person?
I wish she was just crazy.
Yeah. And Kirk's kind of like, I don't really believe you, but Kirk's kind of like, I've been tortured. This green chick tried to fuck me and then tried to kill me. And I don't even know what to think to it anymore. So next thing we see, he opens the window and these guys in environmental suits are outside and they drag Marta into the poison gas. She's choking. She can't breathe.
Why didn't they just drag the Tellarite?
I know. It is sad. And they leave her out there and she's choking.
It's like,
And
if that wasn't bad enough,
he said literally part of the explosive the size of a grain of sand in that necklace that he gave her during the coronation ceremony, and he explodes Marta. So she just
completely pop.
That was it.
Goes there, Ryan.
Yeah, no more Marta.
This explosion is so big that they notice it on the Enterprise.
Yeah, it was like, you know, 9.4 or
on the Richter scale.
Yeah, I was like, is it still there? And he's like, there's still life signs down there. And this is when Scotty and McCoy try to shoot the shield at a weak spot, but has no effect. There's a whole dialogue up in the Enterprise.
It's a weak spot.
How they can't? They're completely.
How can we be so powerful as to destroy a whole planet, but so weak at the same time?
Yeah, it's almost their throwaway lines is basically showing that the Enterprise and the crew can't do anything. They're completely incapable of helping Kirk and Spock to get onto this planet or get them off the planet. So Marta's dead, and then he decides, Garth says, well, if that doesn't motivate you, then I'll get Spock in here, and maybe his logic will change your mind. And from there...
Yeah, she didn't get to sleep with me. How am I supposed to remember that? You blew up the sex. The only sex to be had on the planet.
That was the only thing.
You blew up sex.
That's, I mean, there could be other sex, but it's not going to be green Orion sex.
It's not going to be green Orion sex, which is really the only sex you want to have on this planet.
And I got to say, I'm going to miss those green legs. So, unless they're just laying over in the corner, you could pick them up.
Just like they got ejected from the body. Like, oh.
Still got the legs. So it's disturbing.
Just like someone holding the legs up and flopping them around.
It'd be great, the guy in the atmosphere. Say, I got the legs.
I'll fry it up and be an Orion leg.
Yeah. So Spock comes in, and obviously Garth had turned himself back into Kirk, Kirk's form, and they start fighting, and there's a Kirk against Kirk fight, and it's really just the stunt double with Kirk, and it's just hilarious to watch.
I love watching the stunt double stuff, like this, especially in Space Seed too. That's
yeah,
so
it's great.
Like, you know, high definition is awesome, except for when you watch 60s show and you can clearly see the stuntmen,
and you're at a large TV and you can actually see.
Yeah, it's just
back when we were growing up and watching on a small little normal size
television,
TV,
black and white, it was fuzzy
Kirk
and static.
And Kirk, how do they
do
that?
Awesome. And now it's like, well, that's definitely
that
not
is
Kirk.
Not Kirk.
That's also not Ricardo Montalban either.
No, I know. Yeah.
That scene is hilarious in high definition. If you haven't watched Space Seed in a while, watch Space Seed.
Yeah, high definition.
Yeah,
and,
high definition Space Seed.
And watching the stand-ins fight, and only the close-up you see Shatner and
Ricardo. That's awesome.
So Spock decides that he's going to wait it out and let them fight it out. And then finally... Spock decides to shoot one of the Kirks. And
wait, shoot him. No, shoot him. Oh, we've got to shoot us both. The Enterprise is more important.
Yeah, and which actually, he could have just shot them both.
Anyway.
And it would have done, anything. Would have stunned them, and then he could have just moved on from there. Because he would have seen who is Garth.
Yeah, after he stunned him. Being stunned, yeah, because he can't hold the form.
So, Garth is taken out by Spock, and the security detail comes down. So obviously, Kirk calls and gives a sign, and they administer the medicine that the reason why they were there in Alba 2
in
the
first
place.
Yeah.
And
it doesn't work on Marta, stunningly.
No, the legs don't really respond to the medicine.
They don't come back and start walking around.
No.
Dancing seductively without a rest of the body.
Well, that would be interesting, just the legs. nice reenactment there that nobody got to see. the power of podcasting. So, and then the last scene we have, Garth is in the chair, which has obviously been modified to help people instead of torture them.
No, they removed the chalkboard scratching sound.
Yeah.
There we go.
He's given the medicine and
now sounds like the sounds of humpback whales.
And they are, he's put, he kind of comes to himself and he says, do you know, Kirk's there in Spock. And they introduce himself, and he goes, do I know you? He goes, no, you don't know me. And Garth doesn't recognize them, but you feel that Garth had probably maybe turned the corner, that maybe he's gone back to becoming a rational person. We don't know, of course, but, you know, they kind of leave.
And we never see him again.
No, and then Kirk has a little quip with Spock, like, how did you find out which was the real Kirk? And he goes, I actually knew early on who it was, but I just wanted to see what happened. And Kirk is like, what?
What?
So anyways, so that's the episode. It ends. A lot of, like I said, it's an interesting episode. It has a lot of fodder for great stories and a lot of background information, but also leaves a lot of questions hanging.
Like, what? Yeah, it's just lots of weird stuff. Like, also, Leonard Nimoy himself had a lot of issues with it. I saw in the Memory Alpha that he was complaining that this episode was too much like the first episode where you see the chair. He's like, you're using the same chair and we're using the same plot line.
Yeah, yeah.
He also complained about how the director wanted this episode to be more action-oriented and less like thinking-oriented. And Spock was like, he's like, this doesn't make sense.
Right, right. Yeah,
I'm glad even so early on that Nimoy was like so into his character.
And Kirk, I mean, Shatner just wanted screen time, of course. Oh, yeah. The thing is, to me, is first Alba II. Okay, so there's 15 at least known or captured of the criminally insane within the Federation. Okay, but does that mean that there's other insane people, but these are just the criminally insane?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, this is like the Arkham Asylum of the Federation.
Yeah.
You know, that's essentially what we're talking about here. So, and then
Marta's Harley Quinn, and...
she is.
And Garth is Garth Joker.
Is the Joker. Yeah, exactly. The next part is, you know, this medicine, it seemed to have worked, but then did it? Because obviously we still have the criminally insane in the future. I mean, we have more crazy people show up you know.
Apparently the medicine didn't work. It didn't cure the people because they mentioned crazy people in several episodes after this.
Right. I mean, well.
And into Next Generation.
Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, you know. Well, Voyager didn't really have that much of the insane.
They had the crazy Bajoran guy with the dead eyes.
Right.
I loved those two episodes because he's so creepy because he's like.
But technically, he looks dead part inside. Of the Federation.
Well.
I don't know. I'm just. That's all conjecture. Of
well, course. he's Maquis, and all the Maquis were
fugitives.
Well, also either ex Federation or, and they were reintegrated to Federation on Voyager itself.
But I'm just saying, in the Federation itself, Maquis technically wasn't part of the Federation. I mean, they might have, you know, because they were fighting.
They used to be part of the Federation.
Yes, of course. Then you know, the next thing is obviously. Okay, so we talked about the medicine. Obviously, it seemed to have worked, but obviously it didn't work in the long term.
In the long term, because crazy people
we still have.
Or, you know, just they forgot about this episode.
Which is a possibility when it comes to writers.
Which, you know, I always like saying, like, if, you know, things aren't referenced twice, it's not canon. And, like, if there's crazy people after they've supposedly cured insanity, I'm like, is it canon?
The next part, so we have Garth can change form. So the people of
Antos 3?
Antos 3 gave him this ability. Is this an ability that's inherent with the race, or is this something they learned that just the Antos people learned?
It's like is it a form of magic that they can do?
Or like, you know, kung fu that they learned?
Or are they shapeshifters? And like, I think it's hilarious that this planet is like Kirk says, it's the quintessential planet of peace, and they've got all this, like, you know, nice and it's basically perfect. And like, you know, fast forward to Deep Space Nine, you've got the minions and then the shapeshifters, and they're like, oh my god, we can't do it with shapeshifters.
And why didn't they use the why didn't they use the Antos people to try to infiltrate the
Dominion. Dominion? That would have been amazing. Yeah. Like, he could have tied so many things together.
Yeah, so I mean, there's a lot of questions there, and I think it's cool that, you know, Garth could change forms, and this is sort of like the next chapter in his life, you know, that he could learn how to do this. But then you have the question of, okay, if he can change forms, how could he change clothes? You know, is that part of his form? Is he sort of like an Odo now?
That's what I'm saying, like total shape-shifting.
I mean, did Garth turn into like an Odo type, like... Sleep in a bucket kind of thing.
Sleep in a bucket.
You know.
I need a Latinum coated bucket.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, next question to me is, why wasn't McCoy down delivering the medicine with Kirk and Spock. I mean, I kind of think you'd be the guy down there.
I guess the governor is fully capable of delivering medicine.
He's just a governor. He doesn't say he's a doctor.
Governor of 14 people.
The other part is, you know, we see the governor, but we don't see anybody else that worked at this at the
did asylum. They all die? Like, that would have been a better use of
or something.
Well, no, like if they had them all in prison instead of dragging Marta out. Look, here's all the guards. We're going to give them one like grain of sand and we'll blow up all the guards. That would have been an even better display of
that. It would have been.
And we would have saved Marta.
Yeah. We blew up all those guards. And the next part is going into that mindset is why would there be materials to build an explosive that Garth made on Elba 2?
According to Fight Club, you can build explosions out of all sorts of household goods.
Of course, but my point only being is that if this is, you know, like a maximum security.
Maybe Ritalin is highly explosive.
I don't know, but when he first said it, you know, when because I hadn't watched it in a while, you know, I watched it a couple weeks back, of course, and then we talked about doing this episode, you know, covering it. I thought, is that really explosive, or is he just saying explosive? And obviously he blows up Marta, and it kind of proves that it is explosive. But it's like, at first I thought it would be more fun that he was like, you know, it sounds like somebody who's crazy, who's like just says, these are explosives. And you're like, okay.
And they're just strawberries.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's a strawberry.
That's a strawberry. It tastes like a strawberry. And, oh, you're going to blow up now. But and he the presses taste, the button, that nothing happens.
The taste is explosive. Anyway, so that was like another thing that just like, okay, why is that, you know, that it's not like a deal breaker for me, but obviously you're just like, how did he gather that in that material? And he's locked in a cell.
And if he's so crazy, how does he come up with it? Like, he is pretty far gone. Like, every other thing that comes out of his mouth is just pure nuts.
Yeah, that's the thing is, I think he's crazy, but he's more power hungry, like, that he's like a megalomaniac than anything. He's all over the map. He changes his mind quite often, but it doesn't mean he's crazy. You know what I mean? It's like, I mean, not crazy like he can't like think clearly. I think he probably has a very clear line of thought. He just changes course so often. He zigzags so much that who knows. So I don't know. I think this is like a product of 1960s television painting the people who are, you know, insane a certain way. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
So
it's very dated and how it treats insanity, as we've kind of hammered into.
Yeah, exactly. So that was my takeaway. I wanted to throw out a few things just before we just go into the last little bit of like our takeaways and thoughts about this. Is the guy who played Captain Garth, Steve Inat. He died at 37 of a heart attack.
Good grief.
He was actually younger than Shatner.
Yeah, he's 3 years younger than Shatner at the time of the filming.
So, yeah. So he died. He was promoting a film in Cannes, France, during the Cannes Film Festival. And he died of a heart attack. And he had a baby boy. And I guess his son died, like, at 35 or something like that.
Wow.
Of diabetes or something like that.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's really young for both of them.
Sad, tragic. So, very sad.
Didn't James Gandolfini also die, like, in France or something? Like, when he was promoting something?
Yeah. But
maybe he was in Italy. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm saying that because of The Sopranos. But I thought he was somewhere in Europe. He just died.
Yeah, but he lived a long life. I mean, not long, he was probably in his 50s. So, but I mean, 37 seems really young to be, you know, keeling over a heart attack.
But 50 is still pretty young nowadays.
Oh, yeah, I agree. What else am I going to say? So, obviously, Yvonne Craig, she passed away last year in August. I got here August 17th, 2015.
I know we mentioned it on the show. I don't remember what episode it was, but we definitely mentioned it on the show after it happened.
Yeah. And Yvonne Craig, she obviously played Batgirl. She played opposite roles of Elvis Presley in a couple films.
And I mean, she's definitely a good actress because she's nothing like Batgirl and Martha and Batgirl.
Oh, yeah. No,
I mean,
she's amazing.
She was solid.
She's amazing. I mean, she's beautiful. She's amazing. She's done a lot of things with her life. And all these characters, the three characters, the governor, Garth, and Martha, they're the actors that played those parts had a very robust resume. They played in a lot of television, a lot of movies. So, you know, good actors. I mean, we can kind of make fun of Captain Garth, Lord Garth.
Lord Garth.
Kind of childlike thing. But I, like I said, I think that was a product of the 1960s. The other thing I want to bring out, this is just weird. It has nothing to do with the episode itself. But the director, Herb Wallerstein... So he done a lot of different acting, not acting, but directing. He was a directing staff for Rin Tin Tin in a series, weird series called Circus Boy. And then he was part of the, obviously Star Trek, directing. And then later on, he did a lot of other, directing parts, but then he became a producer for, Fox, where he did the original Alien.
Oh, wow.
9 to 5 with Dolly Parton and Lily Tomlin and I forgot who the other actress is. And anyways, so he did a lot. Then he retired in 1985. This is where it gets crazy.
Mm-hmm.
He retires and he has a housekeeper and her last name's Lopez. And she apparently he came back from the supermarket. And he had a struggle with her where apparently he, this is what I just read up in, on Wikipedia, but he, they had a fight and they fought several times that night, Lopez and the director. And he, Lopez claimed that he threw ice cream in her face and pummeled her repeatedly, giving her a black eye. Lopez, the housekeeper, then took a baseball bat and killed him. Yeah. Crazy. Then Lopez called her boyfriend. They took his body. They put him in Lopez's boyfriend's car, drove him out into the wilderness, and set Lopez's boyfriend's car on fire and burned the body with the car. So...
What?
And
that is so weird.
And so she, obviously the police put the dots together and blame, you know, obviously arrested Lopez and her boyfriend. She actually, was not convicted in the end and they were found not guilty of it. It was reduced. The charges were reduced to a manslaughter ruling. And then it was, she found not guilty of voluntary and involuntary manslaughter and the charges of the arson of Wallerstein's death. And she apparently went free after that.
That's bizarre.
A year later. So it crazy. I didn't, you know, this is just me poking around, just researching who all the people were. And I was like, that's a story that I should just throw out there. So the director of this, who was, you know, part of this, obviously the Star Trek staff at one point from the original series 1980
was murdered.
1985 was murdered with a baseball bat and burned in a car. I don't know what they fought. They didn't. It doesn't say what they fought over. Why he threw ice cream in her face and gave her a black eye. You know.
I feel like ice cream getting thrown in the face is like, you know, gentle compared to a bat. I mean, I guess.
It sounds like they were really struggling. I mean, I think the ice cream was the start of it.
She just happened to have ice cream, and they started wrestling. And he put it in her face. It's like it was supposed to be sexy time, but it turned a little too rough.
I guess.
I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe Wallerstein wanted to be called Lord instead of Captain. I don't
Call
know.
Me Lord.
It has nothing to do with the episode, but obviously.
Except for it's the director and he died.
As director, it's crazy story.
Too bad they didn't blow him up, you know, instead of, you know, putting him on fire, you know.
Just crazy. Like,
they could have, you know, given him the Martha treatment.
They sort of did.
Sort of did.
In a roundabout way without the high explosives. All that being said, we've digested this whole episode. Obviously, this has ties to the Alec Peters Battle of Axanar. What is your thoughts on Whom God Destroys, Garth of Izar, and the episode itself.
So is God CBS and Whom It Destroys is Alec?
Yeah, they did. I think the rest of the quote from this that it was from, it was some poem from Longfellow or something that was, Whom Gods Destroy First Make Mad. So they make them crazy. So that's the quote. Anyways.
Yeah, that's interesting. So
they're driving.
Alec made CBS mad, and CBS became God and destroys
them.
Axanar.
Yeah,
and all the fan films.
Right.
For pretty much ever. Yeah. That 15 minutes.
That 15 minutes is the stupidest time period. It's dumb.
And no continuations.
Yeah.
Like, I know we haven't really officially talked about the fan film guidelines here on the show, and I've kind of wanted to avoid it because of all the stuff that's been going on, but it's just like, it just kind of ties into this episode.
Right.
It's just like, 50 minutes is nothing.
Right. Right.
And like, I heard the official Star Trek podcast, and they had the guy from CBS on, and I was just very, like, disappointed with that entire thing, because everything I wanted to know never really came up about, like, if Star Trek continues, is going to be allowed to continue or not, and a couple other things that, you know, I would have loved to have heard addressed. And, like, they brought up weird things, like, well, what if my show runs, 15 minutes and 10 seconds? And I'm like, that's not one of the things I wanted to know.
Yeah. No, it is one of those things that just is frustrating. And I rewatched the prelude to Battle of Axanar, and I'm just like, man, this is just so wonderfully done. And just, so good.
And it's probably never, ever going to come out.
Oh, no, never.
There's no way this
That's
could.
That's it. I mean, I hate to say it. I mean, a year ago we were,
excited for it.
We had boners over this thing, and then, they threw some cold water on the...
Some ice cold water.
Ice cold. Take a cold shower, boys. It ain't happening. And part of me wonders, because of Axanar's, when it takes place, does this have some kind of...
Supposedly, Star Trek Discovery has nothing to do with Axanar or the Klingon War,
but we're
or
closer
Section
to
31.
We're closer to that time period than we ever were before.
Which, I mean, like, I don't understand why they're saying it has nothing to do with Section 31, because they said there's supposed to be hints about what it was supposed to be about in the... in the trailer, and the ship's registry is 1031. I mean...
Yeah, maybe it is. I don't know.
I don't know. A couple things I've heard it's not supposed to be about Klingons or Section 31.
Too many rumors.
Or Axanar.
Too many rumors. I mean, it's like you're following too many different, avenues of where it could go. So it's hard for...
I'm hoping they'll announce something sometime this weekend, like... Probably they will, because this is how stuff works on Synthaholics. Like, when I recorded with Jeffrey, we were riffing about Star Trek Discovery. Mm-hmm. We had the official news come out later that day that it is a female. There is a female captain. The right. main character is a female, and it's not. And like they had like a bunch of facts that Brian Fuller released the day that we recorded.
Right.
And then when I recorded with Bill Smith about Star Trek V. You, I think, posted that article about William Shatner came out and apologized the same day that released. Like, so literally, like, right after we record this, something will probably come out from Star Trek.
Could happen.
Mission New York. Well, we'll get some more solid news in Star Trek Discovery. So we'll again be riffing, and some of our questions will probably be answered today.
Yeah, and maybe, if we're lucky.
And this will be old news when you're hearing it, because the official news will have already come out. Such is the art of podcasting.
Right, exactly. We're just always a little behind the eight ball. What about the episode itself? Going back to it, is how did you feel watching it again? With fresh eyes,
I can't separate it from all the stuff happening with Alec Peters. I mean, I don't know if that's just my cynicism shining through, but it just I can't. It's just so weird that the way the Axanar stuff went down, and like. How Garth is a crazy person in this episode. Mm-hmm. And like, it almost seems like Alec is a crazy person at this point. Cause he's still like, oh, Axanar is going to happen. Axanar is definitely going to happen. And like, I don't see how it could ever happen. It's almost like he's as blind as Garth is when he was nuts. And it's just so ironic that how he picked wanting to do that character in that story and how real life is turning out. Like it's,
right.
It's almost mirroring the fiction.
Right.
A little bit. I mean, not exactly, but I mean, just,
you can't change shape and you can't blow people up yet, so.
He might try.
My feeling is that I loved the idea that part we touched on while a little bit back about Kirk was trying to appeal to Garth's former self, and he was like, you know, remember who he used to be, you know. And I thought, oh, that's just beautiful. I mean, there was that point that was probably to me was the high point, other than Marta's dancing, was him trying to recall, and Garth has this faraway look, and he's like, first he says, "I don't remember." He goes, "I do remember that." You know, he says, "You know, you were the prototype of the captain. You were everybody wanted to be. You were the best of all Starfleet. You were the best of us." Mm-hmm. And he's like, you know, I love that part that he brought that out, and he was appealing to who he was, and he wanted to bring that back. And you know, of course, then it just, you know, it goes down the drain after that,
because
Garth goes back to his crazy self. But that was, I thought, was interesting. I'd still like the idea that there's, I don't know if I like it, but I mean, I like the idea that the criminally insane still has not been completely eradicated from the Federation.
It's supposed to be utopia. Like, everything's supposed to be good, and all the disease and you know, this is, I mean, you know, mental health is, you know, technically a disease. I mean, it's supposed to be cured.
Yeah.
Although, but of course, we learned that, you know, in Star Trek V, which, you know, may or may not be canon, that Bones' dad had something that was uncurable that they found the cure to, like, 3 days later.
And that makes sense. Okay, fine. You know, that's going to happen. I mean, they're not going to cure everything, but it's not, you know, they haven't all died and gone to heaven yet. So, I don't know. I think it left a lot of questions. I liked the idea behind it all, but I don't think it was, like, really fleshed out how good it could be. Like, I think they could have just, if they connected some more dots to it.
Sure.
I think it would have been a more thought out, you know.
I think it just suffers from being third season Star Trek.
Yeah.
Like, if this was first or second season Star Trek,
I think
they could have done, like, a lot more with
it. And I'm not even talking about production-wise. Actually, production-wise, it was at least watchable.
Well, I mean, not production-wise, I mean, like, but, like, writing and connecting dots.
Yeah.
I think earlier on, they were a little bit better with, you know, getting meaning and stuff across. It's, season three was more like bad guy of the week, like random stuff happening.
Right.
I mean,
right.
You know, as such, this is probably one of the better episodes of season three.
Yeah. Yeah. So I, you know, I didn't dislike it. I just thought it was, you know, I thought it was a little dated.
Goofy.
Yeah. How they try to make the insane into goofy, silly, childlike people. So,
yeah.
Other than that, obviously the whole thing of the Battle of Axnar comes up, which I had an exchange with actually Guy Davis about that, about one that actually took place, because that's all over the map as well. The Battle of Axnar, there's a lot of different.
Oh, is that just through Facebook or something?
Yeah, just we were talking about it, and we were just like, when did it take place? Because it's all over the place. If you look at Memory Beta, it's like they have ranges of different dates of when the 4 years war took place and between the Klingons and the Federation. It's just funny. So,
yeah. And, you know, we have no canon unless somehow if it's not about it specifically in Star Trek Beyond,
right.
Maybe they could reference it again and maybe give it some kind of date. Like, you know, since this is 10 years before Kirk, they could be, oh, that was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they could nail down a canon date, because Memory Beta is all,
yeah, it's all
non-canon
fiction and stuff that hasn't been officially, you know. Yeah. But it's all interesting, you know, just to speculate and to think about it. But it does get into these fuzzy lines where everything's blurred and not a lot of everything makes sense.
Yeah. And, like, you know, like I said, I think he could be like if you know, they had Garth escape.
Yeah.
And the next Star Trek movie, like, you know, have him in jail, have him escape, have him actually get a starship. And then, like, you know, have, like, a battle of wits between Kirk and Darth.
That would be an interesting. I mean, it would be kind of a repeat of Khan, you know, of Star Trek Into Darkness in a way, because you'd have, like, this ultimate villain, you know, smarty pants, you know.
Yeah, but, like, there was no, like, starship battle that was, like, done with tactics of any kind.
I agree.
It was just the Vengeance just wreaking havoc upon the Enterprise, because the Enterprise was
outgunned.
Puny.
Yeah.
The Enterprise never even shot back.
Yeah.
Not once. There was no, like, I mean, I'm sure Spock, you know, outsmarted him by beaming over the live torpedoes, but I mean, that wasn't like,
right.
That wasn't like a tactician, like, space battle. It was just like,
right.
It was just like, hey, we tricked you.
Right. But, yeah, so, I mean, like I said, when it began the show, interesting episode, a lot of great parts to it, a lot of quintessential things that, you know, you think about when you think about the original series, a lot of question marks hanging in the air.
Yeah.
After watching it, like...
Yeah. Well, I mean, just, I think just in general with the original series in the 60s, because it all being brand new, there's going to be a lot more question marks in the original series as a whole than in the rest of Star Trek, because, like, I mean, as much as the 1960 show's iconic and it's what started everything, like, Star Trek, to me, wasn't really solid, like, canonically... It still isn't solid canonically, but it didn't become more solid until, like, the era between Star Trek and Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yeah.
And then in Star Trek The Next Generation, where they started really figuring stuff out and, like, making... trying to connect the dots better.
But, yeah, but to me, is they should have... there should have been more effort over the next series of Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, and Voyager and Enterprise to try to tie all together the original series into it. I think they always thought the original series was sort of just like a... the foundation to touch off of, and then, you know, we don't have to watch all those old episodes. With the, I think if you were going to be a staff writer, you should, your job was to
watch them all.
Or have a Bible written that all this is, these are all things for all these different subjects, and, you know, you should bone up on the, you know, the previous episodes.
Which is why I think it's a terrible idea. Like, I mean, I am excited for Star Trek Beyond. Don't get me wrong. I want to see it.
You mean Discovery?
Discovery. I mean, yeah, Discovery. I'm excited for Discovery. But at the same time, like, canonically in research, I mean, even if you made it a sequel to Deep Space Nine, you'd still have to do all the research. But it's almost more in-depth research doing a prequel, because it's like, oh, we can't meet any of these races that you met, you know. I mean, they kind of cheated a little bit with the Ferengi, but I mean, like, you can't cheat twice. Like, if they, I don't think they can ever bring the Ferengi in again. I mean, and I wouldn't mind, because I mean, they really should touch on the Tellarites, the Orions, and Andorians a lot more.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I mean, we barely see those in any of the other series.
Yeah. Yeah, no, well, besides Enterprise. Yeah. No, I agree. And there, I mean, it's part of it's kind of cool as in a writing aspect, that if you know you're limited to certain things of what you can and can't do.
But that's still just as much, if not more, overwhelming.
I think research. A lot of people. Yeah, I agree. But for God's sakes, if you are ahead of Star Trek and you're supposed to know everything about Star Trek, like I said, there should be a Bible out there with all the rules. When things happen, when they don't happen, and when what you can add. If you're writing Star Trek Discovery and it's 10 years before Kirk, well, these are the races that you can use. These are the races you cannot use. It should just all be spelled out. There people get that who live and breathe this, like us, every day, who you wouldn't even have to pay us, and we could tell you.
Sure.
You know? I mean, we could compile those lists. We could tell you exactly
what. Or just do what Simon Pegg did and do a really good job researching Memory Alpha.
Well, absolutely.
Because, I mean, Beyond was beautiful, and I think a lot of that was because he did such good research on Memory Alpha.
And he was a fan. Trying to make sure obviously he probably talked to other fans and cross-checked his information. Is this right? Is that right? Yeah, because, I mean, it's all you got to do, and it's not that difficult. You know, all you got to just don't make some glaring mistake. And be like, well, why would a Fringy be in this time period, or you know, or anything, like, why would the Borg be in this time period? They would be just dumb,
sure. You know?
So, anyways, just going, Whom Gods Destroy, I think is a fun episode to watch. Maybe not be for everybody who's more into the newer newer material out there.
Sure, yeah,
but it's cool to see. A different take on, the earlier version of Star Trek, you know, revisit it.
Sure, yeah, and it's definitely, like I said before, probably one of the more solid of the third season episodes.
Yeah, well, yeah. You want to see question marks hanging in the air, just watch Spock's brain.
Brains. Spock zombie.
Oh, boy. Yeah, so cool. Good stuff.
All right, well...
Fan email... Fan email.
We have an email. It's been a long time, and it's like, I'm so excited. We got an email right before I recorded with Aaron again, because I know Aaron loves emails.
I do. It's not from Ultra Woman, is it?
No, Ultra Woman never got back to us.
I didn't think she would, the way we made her feel after that.
We don't know. I think we made her feel loved and desired. I don't know.
I don't know. I think we creeped her out.
Oh, okay. But, you know, our heart was in a good place.
It was. Mine was.
All right. We have an email from John Reynolds. He says, I've been enjoying your show. For an episode, I think it would be interesting to hear your thoughts on a review of the TNG Doctor Who crossover comics.
Oh, cool.
I enjoyed it in no small part because instead of camping it up, they played it straight. I thought it was funny to see Worf tell the Doctor to shut up. I would also like to see Worf tell the Doctor to shut up. he's going to just turn off the hailing frequencies because that's what Worf does. It's like,
just shut up.
Yeah. Let's see. Also, it raised some interesting questions to me about who Guinan is. The coolest thing to me was, I think, it might even be at least Doctor Who canon, because the Cybermen started acting much more like the Borg after this came out. Anyway, I look forward to hearing your thoughts, and you could use my name and information in the podcast, which I already did.
Sorry.
Well, I did read about it before, so I
know. I know.
And they said, if you don't mind, I'm going to mention your podcast on my blog that I need to write more in, and I'll link it to your site there. I'm like, yes, that would be awesome. I would love if you'd mention us on the show, on your blog. And thanks for letting us use your information, and thanks for the email specifically.
Yeah,
it's always good to hear from people who listen and see what they think and see what we think on things, because I think that's fun, having a two-way interaction instead of just a one-way interaction.
Absolutely. That being said, unfortunately, I am aware that they did the crossover. They did the Doctor Who crossover. They did the Planet of the Apes crossover as well. I have not read those. I'm a big comic fan. I read comics as much as I can when I can. But I haven't actually got a chance, and I would like to actually go and maybe get a collection of those, you know, to read them.
I mean, I wouldn't mind reading these and doing doing an episode with Synthaholics about it. Maybe get Guy on it too, because Guy's also big in comics. I'm probably the least big on comics out of the group. I don't like dislike them. I just.
You don't read as much.
I didn't really grow up with them. I had like the only comics I had when I was a kid was I had one season of Spider-Man. And or 1 year subscription to Spider-Man, and then I never really continued it because my parents didn't want to pay for it. And
right,
they thought some of the material was objectionable inside the comic books anyway. So I didn't really; it just wasn't something I grew up with, so it wasn't big on me. But I mean, I did buy the Firefly comics that came out before Serenity.
Yeah,
I read some of the ongoing comics for the Star Trek Kelvin timeline, and I did. Someone at work let me borrow the Green Lantern and Star Trek crossover.
Which was interesting.
Which was really weird.
Yeah, it was interesting.
They give everybody a ring, and then it seemed like it was an insurmountable odds, and they just wrap it up in 5 seconds. I'm like, what?
Yeah, yeah.
I was really disappointed by how that
ended. That's just poor writing.
It just felt like it should have gone on longer, because it was building up, and things were getting darker and darker and darker, and then... And then, they wrap things up so quick. I was like, that doesn't even make any sense.
I sort of feel that Doctor Who would be sort of like a more congenial, happy-go-lucky Q, without obviously the infinite powers. Just that he can, the goofy stuff he can do. He can go, obviously different, parts of the universe, and he can, interact with so many different people. He's not limited to, jumping into warp speed and visiting a planet.
I wouldn't mind talking about the comic if we did get a chance to, pick it up and I'll read it so we can all be on the same page. I just, I've never really watched Doctor Who. So as to being able to comment on the Cybermen before and after, I would have no frame of reference other than what I saw. And
I gotta apologize for my friend here. we're gonna have to do some homework here. If you watch, I grew up with the old series at Doctor Who, and I started watching the new stuff, and it not only is the new stuff way better produced, of course, the stories are just so much more it's so much more interesting, engaging. They're fun.
I've seen one or two of the David Tennant episodes. They weren't bad, but yeah. I started the first season on Netflix is the guy with a really short buzzed hair.
Yeah, he's the guy who plays the villain. And
he looks he looks like a villain. Like he looks like a villain in a bunch of movies.
Yeah, no.
I watched a couple of those episodes. I just couldn't get into it. It was really, really hard. And the thing is, like, I also have a stigma a little bit with Doctor Who. It's like I've got friends who like obsess over Doctor Who and they just shit on Star Trek all the time. And I'm just like, really? Like, I watched the first couple episodes of this thing, and this is way campier and silly, not
I know.
As great. I'm like, how are you shitting on Star Trek?
It's hard to... two things for me is when people are, like, rabidly into things, I recoil. So that's one thing. And also, obviously, comparing different fandoms is just dumb. It's like, yeah, I get it. Like, maybe you're into Doctor Who more than you're into Star Trek, but... If you don't know anything about it, if you've never seen Star Trek, or if you've only seen like maybe 6 episodes or whatever, you're kind of like not judging it too well. You know, there's hundreds of episodes, just like there's hundreds of episodes of Doctor Who.
So. Sure. I'm not trying to discredit people who love Doctor Who at all. I'm just saying like you're not even giving Star Trek a chance, and Star Trek is way more serious. And in the couple episodes I've seen, Star Trek generally has better writing.
Yeah.
I can't say as a whole because I haven't seen a lot of Doctor Who. But I'm just saying, and from the little snippet I've seen, like, it was just kind of like, I don't understand why you're making fun of me for liking Star Trek, and Doctor Who's way sillier.
I would like to actually compile a list of a few Doctor Who episodes that you should watch that are actually phenomenal.
Sure. I would love to watch recommendations, but I was just trying to watch it from the beginning, and I got like 4 episodes into the villain guy, and I'm like,
the best episode on that one I think is called The Doctor Can Dance or Doctor Dances or something like that, and it's about him during World War II during the attacks, the German attacks on London, and it's phenomenal. It's a two-parter. It's a great episode, even though he is not as likable as David Tennant or Matt Smith. It's a great story. And I would actually like to see you watch it and get your reaction, because it's very sci-fi, still little fantasy thrown in. So that's interesting. So
that's cool. I mean, like, I'll definitely take some recommendations and give them a watch, and maybe we can even talk about it on the show. Do an offshoot, do a Doctor Who episode, maybe.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
See what people say. Because I mean, I'm open to it. I just watching it from the beginning to end. I don't know if I could do it, but if you can give me some good recommendations, I could probably.
Yeah, I wouldn't want you to go through the whole mire of watching all the Doctor Who's. I mean, you'd be,
because like I said, I've seen a couple of the David Tennant episodes. And I don't remember which ones. I remember he was like talking to the devil, like he was like in the pit or whatever. Mm-hmm. I remember that episode because I was watching it because it was on before Battlestar Galactica, back when that was on TV. And I like David Tennant. I think he's a phenomenal actor, especially in Jessica Jones. Oh my gosh, that was absolutely amazing. So I mean. And like I said, a couple episodes of him I've seen as Doctor Who were pretty good. I mean, they're okay. I mean, I just have no frame of reference for the story or.
Yeah, no, it's obviously, you know, there's a lot of mythology built on around Doctor Who. Interesting. Sorry we couldn't answer that right away with the Doctor Who Star Trek crossover.
Oh, but I think he's asking us to do a topic on it. So I mean that's something we can,
I would love
we,
to do
we
that.
Can pursue. I just need to get my hands on those comics.
Yeah, I would definitely. I'll
so, like,
make a point of that, and we can maybe do that
them
in
I
the
can
future.
Borrow your
yeah, yeah, that would be that'd cool. be fun to read and to find out.
He actually offered to let me borrow them, but I don't live anywhere. He lives down south, and I'm up in Buffalo, so I didn't want to say exactly where he lived, but
his address is.
He gave me his address for me to come over and pick up his books. No, but yeah, we're a little bit far away for me to borrow his.
No,
but,
it's one of those things that. Yeah, we should definitely. I we've talked in the past about covering
different things. I mean, and I think we definitely should. I mean, I'd love to do the movie Alien one day, talk about on the show, because I'd love to do just general science fiction. But we're mostly a Star Trek podcast. But I think it'd be fun to.
We've
branch
jumped
out
around a bit.
Around.
Obviously, we did Galaxy Star Quest. Star Wars,
Spaceballs,
Yeah. But yeah, excellent. Thank you so much for that email. And definitely email us if you have anything you want to say. If you. You know, want to talk about topics, questions.
Even if it's a really old episode, if you like, say, you know, you want to point something out that we may have missed, I mean, we'd love to read that and talk about that on the air as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Very cool.
Well, thank you so much for that email, John.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say all our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com. And Warp11 at Twitter. You can find us online at Synthaholic Duo. Our website's Synthaholics.com. You can email us at Synthaholics@yahoo.com. You can find me
Hey, where are you?
You can find me at David_J_Duncan.
You can find me at Blackbird2004. You can
find Faith at Faith Hertzberg and Guy Davis at GS Davis Art.
Yeah.
And at USS Tamberlin.
Yeah, don't forget to support the Tamberlin. Mm-mm-mm.
It's a good comic.
I like it.
It's one of the comics I still kind of I do follow. Thanks to Aaron, and thanks to having him bring Guy on the first time almost a year ago.
It's all my fault.
You can, if you want to support Guy and his comic, you can do so at patreon.com/GSDavisArt.
Support the arts.
And if you want to support the podcast,
support us.
Audio art. you can support us at patreon.com/synthaholics.
Very nice of you when you do.
We appreciate it very much. We try to do commentary episodes and some other perks in there for you to check out. You can, if you would like, if you don't want to give us money, you can help us out a whole lot if you went on iTunes or Google Play Music or Stitcher and wrote a review. Whichever way you listen to us, go on and write a review so we can be seen. And so more people will find us.
Find us, exactly. Recommend us as a friend. Also, and if you do see us in the street, you can scratch our backs. We do enjoy a good back scratching.
And a high five, or however you like to greet your friends.
It's all creating how they do it in different areas.
Sure, yeah. I mean, you know, in Russia, they probably, you know, just pour vodka
into your mouth
from the bottle. No, thank you.
Just don't kick us in the balls, all right?
Yeah, that would not be fun. Even if you hate us, please don't kick us in the balls. Although, if you hate us, I don't know why you've listened to the episode this long.
What's wrong with you? Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Live long and prosper. You're the best drinking friend I ever had. Garth of Alec. I mean, Alec of Peters. I mean, Peters of Izar.
Get yourself sued.
Right here in Synthaholics.
But I don't have any money, Garth. It's a problem.
Strange women lying in ponds distributed insanity medicine.
Oh, there's so much to talk about this episode.
Yeah. Yvonne Craig. Oh.
So many problems with this episode.
Yeah. Alrighty.